If you have your Bible with you here this morning, if you can take it and turn to the book of Esther. We are going to begin our series through the month of January, looking through the book of Esther. And so today, we're going to kind of do a little bit of an overview and kind of give a big picture as to what's happening here in the book of Esther. Sometimes in life, it's important to gain a big picture. Too often we spend time caring about ourselves and seeing how things impact us, and we see things maybe through the light of how things affect us, and we miss out on something bigger. Sometimes we miss out on the big picture or things that are happening, and need to understand that there are things that are bigger than us. Life isn't always about you. Life isn't always about me. The book of Esther, even though the title is Esther, it's not really about Esther. The book of Esther is about God. It's about the creator. It's about the savior of the world. He is the main character in this book, and he is the main character in a book that his name is never even mentioned in. If you read through Esther, God is not mentioned one time, but he is still the main character. And whether we realize it or not, whether we know it or not, whether we recognize it or not, God is the main character in our story as well. So as we look at the book of Esther here this morning, I think it's extremely important that we get an understanding of what's happening. And so we're going to kind of walk through some of the main characters of Esther, what's happening in the book, and kind of walk through some of the plot. So the main characters of Esther, the first one is King Xerxes. He is also known as King Ahasuerus. He is, if you have a Bible, maybe your translation says Xerxes, maybe it says Ahasuerus. They're both the same person. He is the king, and he ruled from Persia from 486 to 465 BC. The events in the book of Esther, they fit perfectly with secular chronology. The great banquet that happened in 483 happens as he plans his conquest of Greece. And then the new queen that comes in 479 fits in with his return from Greece and defeat when he sought solace in his harem. As we look at King Xerxes, some of the things in his personality, some of his character also fits in what we know from secular history. He was a very sensual man, and he was a very rash individual. We look at Queen Vashti, another main character in the book of Esther. She was queen of Persia, and she refused to appear at the drunken party given by King Xerxes at his command. And her failure to appear embarrassed the king and embarrassed the other men of Persia, and so that she was removed from being queen. And that opened the door for Queen Esther. Esther, a Jewish woman, orphaned at an early age, she was adopted and she was raised by her cousin Mordecai. She becomes queen to Queen Xerxes. And when she becomes queen, she hides her Jewish identity. At Mordecai's advice, she decides that she shouldn't tell the king about her heritage and her identity. With great courage, we see Esther risking her life to save her people. She seeks an audience with the king, and at this point, she reveals who she is, and she reveals the danger that her people are facing, and she exposes the source of the danger in evil Haman. Esther, the famous words that many of us know in chapter 4, verse 16, where she says, "I will go to the king, which is not according to the law, and if I perish, I perish." Esther is an intriguing character. Some of the things we learn about Esther as we read the story is we understand that she is kind of a meek person. She obeyed her cousin Mordecai, and she gave authority to him. We know through reading the book that she's a kind person. She was a person who impressed those who dealt with her. She was a courageous woman who took action in moments of crisis. Esther was a woman who was called by God, and she was used by God, and she accomplished God's purpose at a moment of crisis. But we can also see some other things about Esther. Even though she was God called and God used, maybe some of her actions we look at, maybe they're not especially godly actions. And maybe as we look at Esther, there's some debate, but maybe she wasn't exactly always a godly person. You see, because one of the things she did was she hid her Jewish identity. She was willing to audition for the pagan king and become part of his harem. She was willing to become the pagan king's wife. She failed to share her heritage for many, many years and to share her Jewish faith. Scholars will have some disagreement over this and exactly how we hold Esther when we look at her character. Some scholars would say things like that Esther was a model disciple of God that we should imitate, She constantly did the right thing, made the right decisions, and said the right words. Esther embodied faith. But other scholars would disagree, and they would say things like, it seems best to praise Esther for her courage and not necessarily for her character. The disturbing ethical practices of Esther and Mordecai resulted in the deliverance of the Jewish people from a terrible program, but their success does not prove that the means used were good or pleasing to God. And so there's some debate as to exactly the godliness of Esther. Now, was she a God follower? Yes. Was she a person who loved the Lord? Yes. But even people who follow God sometimes do things and act in ways that maybe aren't necessarily godly. And then we look at Mordecai, another important person as we look through the book of Esther. Mordecai, the cousin to Esther, adopted, raised Esther. He was an official in King Xerxes' government, and he uncovers this plot to assassinate King Xerxes. And through Esther, he reveals the plot to the king. We see Mordecai is someone who refused to show respect worship, depending on your interpretation, to Haman. Haman at this time was the number two man in King Xerxes' government. See, bowing before a leader like Haman could be proper or improper depending on the circumstances and depending on the setting. You know, it is proper in many settings to show respect to a leader. It's improper at any time to worship somebody other than God. We see Mordecai as a person of character. We see him as a person who encourages Esther to intervene for the Jewish people. We see him as a person who, with Esther, will devise a plan, and implement a plan to save the Jews. But we also see Mordecai as an intriguing character as well in some of the practices that he did. And the inconsistencies that we see in Esther's life, we also see in the life of Mordecai. You know, he supported Esther as she entered the king's harem, and he encouraged Esther to not reveal her Jewish faith, her identity, and her religion. And he quite possibly, depending on your interpretation, failed to show proper respect to Haman. See, some commentators believe that Haman demanded worship, and that Mordecai was justified in not worshiping and refusing to bow down and pay homage to Haman. But other commentators would disagree, and they would say that Haman was just demanding respect, and that Mordecai was not justified in his refusal to bow down and pay homage to Haman. So the last character that we're going to look at here is this person, Haman, that we've talked about. He's described as an Agagite. Some have concluded that he was an Amalekite, descendant of King Agag. The Amalekites were ancient enemies of Jews. And this might partially explain why Mordecai refused to show respect to Haman if he was an Amalekite and he was an enemy of the Jews. And this might also partially explain why Haman had such hatred for the Jews that he wanted them to be exterminated because of the history that's going on there. Haman, the number two man in King Xerxes' government. As we look through the book of Esther over the next few weeks, it's important we understand these people and all of these people that we talk about, they're important to the story. Not all of them are followers of God. Not all of them are making godly decisions. Even those who are God followers are not really making all the time godly, good godly decisions, but they all play a role in the story. See, there's no story without these individuals, but the story is not about any of these individuals. The story is about God and not these people. Let's take a few moments this morning as we kind of give some of the background and kind of share with you some of the plot that's happening through the book of Esther. So we have Vashti, who's been removed as king, and Esther is now put in a place, and she is now the queen. And we come to a situation where Mordecai is in a position where he saves the king. And in Esther chapter 2, verses 21 through 23. It says, in those days, while Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate, Bigthan and Teresh, two of the king's officials, from those who guarded the door, became angry and sought to lay hands on King Asarius. And the plot became known to Mordecai, and he told Queen Esther, and Esther informed the king in Mordecai's name. And when the plot was investigated and found to be so, they were both hanged on the gallows, and it was written in the book of Chronicles in the king's presence. So you have this event going on where Mordecai, he saves the king and he uncovers this plot to save the king. And then you have Haman. While this is going on, Haman comes up with this plot to exterminate and kill the Jews because of Mordecai. Haman is promoted, and as he's promoted, all the king's servants, he's requested to pay homage to him, but Mordecai refuses, and so he becomes angry with Mordecai. And he goes to the king, and he comes up with this plan, maybe a little bit of a con, and he talks to the king, and he says, King Xerxes, we had assigned a plot to exterminate the Jews, and the words in Esther 3:13, to kill and annihilate all the Jews, both young and old, women and children, in one day, the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, and to seize their possessions. And so Haman has this plan that he's going to exterminate the Jews. And so Mordecai and Esther, they find out about this, and they come up with a plan, and they hatch their own plan so that they can come and they can come against Haman. And so in Esther chapter 4, verses 13 through 17, we read a little bit of their plan. Esther 4:13, it says, "Then Mordecai told them to reply to Esther, 'Do not imagine that you are in the king's palace can escape any more than all the Jews. If you remain silent in this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, and you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether you have been not attained royalty for such a time as this?' Then Esther told them to reply to Mordecai, 'Go, assemble all the Jews who are found in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my maidens also will fast in the same way. And thus I will go into the king, which is not according to the law. And if I perish, I perish.' So Mordecai went away and did just as Esther had commanded him to do." So Mordecai and Esther, they hatch this plan. And as this is happening, as they're having their plan here, we see that Haman is continuing his plan of execution. He's continuing to figure out a way to get rid of Mordecai specifically and the Jews. And so he has these gallows made for Mordecai. And we read about those in Esther chapter 5, verses 9 through 14. In Esther 5, 9 through 14, it says, "And Haman went out that day, glad and pleased at heart. But when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate, and that he did not stand up or tremble before him, Haman was filled with anger against Mordecai. Haman controlled himself, however, and went to his house and sent for his friends and his wife, Zeresh. Then Haman recounted to them the glory of the riches and the number of his sons, and every instance where the king had magnified him, and how he had promoted him above the princes and the servants of the king. Haman also said, 'Even Esther, the queen, let no one but me come with the king to the banquet which she had prepared, and tomorrow I am invited by her with the king. Yet all this does not satisfy me. Every time I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate.' Then Zeresh his wife and all of his friends said to him, 'Have a gallows 50 cubits high made. In the morning ask the king to have Mordecai hanged on it. Then go joyfully with the king to the banquet.' And the advice pleased Haman, so he had the gallows made." So he has a plan that he's going to exterminate Mordecai, and he's going to come and he's going to have Mordecai hanged at these gallows. And in God's sovereignty and the way that God works, it just so happens the night before this event is to happen that the king can't sleep. And in Esther chapter 6, verses 1 through 10, I'll give you a little summary of what happens here. But the king has a little insomnia and he can't sleep. And so he asked his attendants, he says, "Hey, can you bring the book of history to me? And can you read this book of history to me since I can't sleep?" And so his attendants go and they get the book of Chronicles, the book of history, and they turn to the part in the book where Mordecai was recorded that he saved the king. And so the king is having this read to him, and he's hearing again the story of how Mordecai saved him. And he says to the attendants, he says, "What have we done to reward this man? What have we done to give this man what he's earned for this?" And they said, "We have done nothing." And it just so happens that Haman is hanging out there at the time. And the king turns to Haman and he says, "What would you do for a guy who has done these great things for me? And what would you do for a guy that has put himself out?" And Haman naturally thinks, "Well, of course the king's talking about me because I'm Haman and I'm a great guy." So he gives this great plan of what the king should do to reward this person, and then finds out that it's not him, but it's Mordecai. And so he has to lift Mordecai up in a way that he didn't want to, and angers him more, which is God putting off again the time of the execution. And then it comes time for Haman's plot to become exposed. In Esther chapter 7, verses 1 through 10. It says, "Now the king and Haman came to drink wine with Esther and the queen. And the king said to Esther, on the second day also as they drank their wine at the banquet, what is your petition, Queen Esther? It shall be granted you. And what is your request? Even a half the kingdom it shall be done. Then Queen Esther replied, if I have found favor in your sight, O king, and if it pleases the king, let my life be given me as my petition and my people as my request. For we have been sold, if we have been sold, I and my people to be destroyed, to be killed and annihilated. Now, if we had been sold as slaves, men and women, I would have remained silent, for this trouble would not commensurate with the annoyance of the king. Then a king Assyrius asked Queen Esther, who is he, and where is he who would presume to do this? Esther said, a foe and an enemy is this wicked man, Haman. Then Haman became terrified before the king and queen. The king arose in his anger from the drinking wine and went to the palace garden. But Haman stayed to beg for his life from Queen Esther, for he saw that harm had been determined against him by the king. Now when the king returned from the palace garden into the place where they were drinking wine, Haman was falling on the couch where Esther was. Then the king said, will he even assault the queen with me in the house? And word went out to the king's mouth and covered Haman's face. Then Harbonah, one of the eunuchs who was before the king, said, behold, indeed, the gallows standing at Haman's house, 50 cubits high, which Haman made for Mordecai, who spoke good on behalf of the king. And the king said, hang him on it. So they hanged Haman on the gallows, which he had prepared for Mordecai, and the king's anger subsided. So Esther exposes Haman's plot, and Xerxes has Haman hanged on the very gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. And then Mordecai takes Haman's position as a number two man in the kingdom. But we have this little issue because there's already been a decree that the Jews should be exterminated, and the king can't take that back. He's already issued it. So Mordecai draws up a plan to have the Jews defend themselves against their enemies, and Xerxes allows the Jews to defend themselves, and the Jews are victorious, killing 75,000 people. Gives you a plot, gives you an idea of what's happening here in the book of Esther. But as you look through the book of Esther, there's some really important truths that we need to understand. As I mentioned earlier, the name of God is never mentioned in the book of Esther. But the presence of God is felt throughout the entire book. God is the central character of the book. God's sovereignty is a central theme in the book of Esther. Merrill says, no book of the Bible demonstrates more clearly the purposes and providence of the Lord than this. You see, God is working behind the scenes. And he's working behind the scenes to spare his people. And in our lives today, we have a God who is working. We have a God who is working behind the scenes. We have a God that is doing things that we don't even see. You know, he used unwitting people. He used people that never even knew they were being used by God. As we read this story and as we look at the people, they had no idea God was using them, but he was. And in our world today, God is using people that have no idea that they're being used by God. God is using events that seem to be unrelated. I read a few of those to you. Unrelated events which to the people that it's happening to could be overlooked. And they could just see them as events that are happening. But to God, these are events that are taking place for his purpose, for his will, as these things are going on. In Esther 4:14, we see a really cool picture of God's sovereignty. It says, for if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, and you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether you have not attained royalty for such a time as this. Mordecai says to Esther, he says, look, God's going to fulfill his purpose. God is going to do what God's going to do, and God's going to save his people. God is going to do that, but Esther, maybe you have been created for such a time as this. See, God is working all around us, and God is going to work, and God's going to do what God is going to do, and God invites us to be a part of what he's doing and to be a part of who he is and to be a part of his plan. Look at these events. Look at these things that are happening as we see this. In this event we just read, Vashti, she just happens to be gotten rid of as queen. That just happens to happen, right? And it just happens that when she's gone, that Esther takes her place. And it just happens that Mordecai uncovers a plot to assassinate King Xerxes. And it just so happens that Mordecai's actions are recorded in the king's chronicles. And it just so happens that the night before Mordecai is to be killed, that the king can't sleep. And so he asks for them to be read. And it just so happens that when they read them, they pick out the book of Chronicles, and it just so happens they turn to that page, right? And they turn to the page, and it just so happens they choose the part that deals with Mordecai sparing the king's life. And the king just so happens to decide at that moment that he cares that Mordecai got a proper reward. He didn't care about Mordecai's proper reward earlier, but he cares about it now. And it just so happens, and all these coincidences just happen. Or maybe they happen because we have a God who's working behind the scenes and orchestrating things. They seem to be coincidences, but the writer of the book of Esther knows better. They're not coincidences, and the readers, us as the readers of the book of Esther, we know better. We know these events are controlled by the hand of God. And we have a God who's controlling the actions of men and women, believers and unbelievers, Jews and pagans. God is in control. See, these coincidences are not limited to the realm of God's people. We have Persian kings and royal officials who move and act under the hand of the great sovereign God. And we have a God just like that. This God is working in our world today. And God is working in our life like that today. See, God is working. He's working in the lives of the saved, and he's working in the lives of the unsaved. He's working with events, great and small. Our God is working all around us. And the thing is we go through life, and sometimes we don't even notice what God's doing because we're missing the big picture. We're missing seeing God because we're seeing things through our own lens. And we need to understand who this God is, a God that we can trust to accomplish his purpose. Think about our life and all the things that are going on in our lives. All the events that are happening, and to us, maybe they just look like little insignificant events. They seem like events that maybe are unconnected. But sometimes if we take the time to step back and to look, we can see a great hand of God moving all around us. And it's pretty neat when those dots start to connect. You ever had those happen where you're going through some things and then something happens and you step back and you say, man, God was doing something there. I can see how God was working. I can see that God was moving in a way that I never even imagined. And we see that through the book of Esther, and we can see that in our lives. See, here's the truth. The truth is that God is the hero of the book of Esther, and the truth is that God is the hero of your story. Whether we believe it or not, God is the main character. Whether we believe it or not, God is the hero, and he is working in our lives the whole time. And so we need to get to a point in our life where we realize that life doesn't revolve around us. Life doesn't revolve around Ed. And I go through those points in my life. If we're honest, we'll say that. We go through times in our life where we think we're the main character. And we think that everything should revolve around our needs, what we want, our desires. And that's not the case. We are not the main character. We are not the center of the universe. We're not the most important. Who's the most important? It's God. It's a relationship with him. It's who he is. It's how he's moving. This is all about him, and it's not about us. Sometimes in our churches, we do the same thing. We look at our church, and we say, you know, our church should do the things that we want it to do, and it should revolve around our desires and our wants, and we need to get to a point where we say, this is not our church, it's God's church, and we want God to be the center of our church. And we look at our friends and our relationships. We see our relationships, we want to center around us. And at the point where he says our relationships don't center around us, they have to center around God. God has to be the main focus. He has to be the center. We have to come to a point in our life where we align our life with God's purpose, where we respond to his activity in life. We open our eyes to what he's doing, and we look and see the way that he's weaving things together, and we get to a point in our life where we can say, I trust him completely. I trust God completely with what's happening right now in my life, and I trust God completely with my future, because I know that he is a God who is at work. That trusting is sometimes so difficult for us to say, I'm going to fully put my trust in God. But remember, we see such a small picture, and God sees it all. We see how things impact us. God knows how things work throughout eternity. And that's the God that we serve. And I'm so thankful that we don't serve a small God. I'm so thankful as we read the book of Esther that God isn't sitting here through the book of Esther saying, I really hope the right decisions are made so that I can work. Because God's not doing that. God didn't do it in Esther, and he's not doing it today. God's not saying, I really hope that we make right decisions so that you can move. God is saying, I am moving, and I am working, and I have a plan. Join me. Be a part of what I'm doing. Come be a character in the story that I am writing. And that's the invitation here this morning. how do we respond to what God's doing in our life? We're going to spend the next 3 weeks looking through and studying through the book of Esther, and we're going to dig a little more into some of these stories. But as we do that, I want to invite us to think about what God would have for us, what God would have for our lives. Ask yourself the question, who's the most important person in your story? And if we're sitting here this morning and God's not the most important person in your story, maybe it's time that we have to rethink some things in our life. And we've got to put God in the place that he deserves and make him the central point in our story and say, God, we're going to line ourselves up with you, and we're not going to expect you to line yourself up with me. The story of Esther, the story of our life, and the invitation that we're extending today.
I'm giving you my heart. All that is within, I lay it all down for the sake of you, my King. I'm giving you my dreams, I'm laying down my rights, I'm giving up my pride for the promise of new life. And I sharing in your pain.